My bros, my turts, it's that time again. Our series is winding down, the final episode.
So, we're rounding the corner on the story of the Hamato clan and Sophie Campbell.
You know, no big plot or whatever, but characters just kind of existing in a space, and there's nothing, like, necessarily, like, urgent that's happening, and I feel like that can still be interesting. And is conflict necessary? No, it's not. It's not necessary. I feel like I keep throwing Tom under the bus, kind of. You know, I love Tom. And, you know, I remember when I read his proposal for City at War. And I finished it and I was like, God damn, this is great. But I'm exhausted. And I wish I just, like, wrote, like, a ton of scripts, you know, and just, like, did it all, gotten it all out of the way before I had to start drawing again. But I guess that's always how it goes. It was always.
And we're going to pick up where Sophie picked up the series after the event that would change the turtles' lives forever.
You know, it's just, it's so intense. And, like, after City at War, I was just like, we gotta slow down. We gotta just, you know, like, especially since Splinter died. It's just like, we gotta slow down and just, like, let the characters just, like, breathe for a second, you know, catch their breath.
Spoiler alert, sorry not sorry, but it's like the great prophet Dwayne Carter once said, all rats gotta die, even Master Splinter.
Right, but, I don't even know, bro, you threw me off with that one.
Okay, it's cool, I got it.
Nah, I'm cool. I just need a minute to process that. This is Wilson and Lou covering Sophie Campbell's journey to becoming the head writer and artist on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
A lot of just tough content right there to cover. I mean, 113 plus issues, you know, with macro, micro, all of that stuff is is hell to even traverse. So yeah, I'm glad she was so down to walk us through all of her, you know, all of her attachments to turtles and to the art that it is.
Right, but I know exactly where we're gonna start. On page 2 of issue 101.
Ooh, the second page. Oh man. Ayo, Sophie opened up with some heat. All right, so in the first panel, right, we've got the turtles positioned around Master Splinter's, you know, gravesite memorial. We've got Raph really far in the distance, and you got, you know, like Mike, you've got Leo, you've got Donnie, you've got Jenny there also closer to Master Splinter. And then you've got Casey and April, you know, also on the side, and Alopex. So, yeah, so, like, that's the positioning of everybody. In terms of, like, their distance to and away from Splinter and the rest of the turtles.
Ooh, good observation. And they're in Northampton again. And this time the change is big. Leaves blow in the wind along with the grass, and each of the turtles is highlighted in a wide angle panel. First, Leo's the stoic big brother, tears flowing from his face, even behind his headband, and he's looking ahead trying to stay strong.
Right, we got the youngest bro of the Hamato clan, Mikey, head down, very, very somber, headband around his eyes, clothes really full of tears, you know, grief-stricken.
Logical, Donnie looks ahead as he holds back a tear, and he just seems deep in thought.
And their new big sister, Jenny, she stares angrily ahead, right at the grave of her surrogate father who's fallen, somebody that she's grown to love, appreciate, and admire.
Raph goes a step further than the rest of his siblings and completely removes his headband as he walks away, eyes full of tears.
Yeah, and there's no words on this page, but it says a ton. And even then, when Raph lets the headband go, and he looks, he's looking ahead, Pepperoni's on his shoulder, and Pepperoni looks back. So, like, even Pepperoni, you know, the, I guess the pet, family pet, gets to evoke and convey feelings and emotions.
It's a really stunning opening and a great way to start the series. And we got to talk to Sophie about that opening.
I can look. I have the trade right here. I can look.
Dope. Yeah.
Okay. So page 2?
Yes.
Oh yeah. It's like the funeral page.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about the composition of that page and how you decided to do that page?
Yep. We just love that page.
Okay. I appreciate it. I really like wide, thin, horizontal panels to begin with. And I don't know, there's something like, you know, I think like I see some people talk about that kind of style as like cinematic because it looks like a widescreen movie. But I don't feel like that's what it is. I feel like there's something kind of like serene about a really wide panel, especially one that's like kind of narrow vertically. And it just like, it lets the panel kind of breathe. And especially when you have just like one or two characters in it, you can have just like a lot of negative space and just really kind of focus on the character's eyes, because like eyes are kind of horizontal, and I feel like it just kind of mimics that. And I think there's also, especially for turtles, because like they all have the masks, and the masks are like thin horizontal strips. And so it just kind of fits with like the overall, like all the shapes kind of like echo each other and fit, and just, they just seem really like tranquil to me. And just having like the characters' heads, you know, like focus on their eyes and just have all this empty space on like either side of them. And I don't know, I felt, you know, it was the funeral page, and I felt like it needed to just be like, have a lot of room to breathe and not, you know, I feel like when pages are like tall vertical or squares, it feels like things are going extra fast to me. Like it feels like the pace is quicker.
Got it. So my question on the page itself now is, when you said panel one, character standing around, now like Jenny's there, you have Leo, Donnie, we have Mikey, and then Raph is like a bit further. You know, since the turtles, when you first read it, we know that Raph maybe spent about a year, maybe half a year, not with the family because of, you know, of like how he got separated during the mutation.
Right.
So, yeah. So was that like intentional, or was that just like a happy accident?
No, it was definitely intentional, because like part of it is because, you know, he walks away at the end,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the page. So, you know, it's kind of just like he's already kind of planning his exit in that first panel. And yeah, it's just like a, you know, he's always kind of separate.
Yeah.
And it's a setup of him, you know, being on his own in the city.
Sweet, sweet. Very cool. I like that.
So let's Kisho Tenketsu this first Sophie arc.
All right, so key, the introduction, right?
Right. That's that first page that we just talked about in Northampton. We spent some time there.
Show is the development.
Right. None of the turtles have worn their headbands since the funeral, and they, in fact, left them at the grave. It's winter in Northampton, and it's more than the snow that's keeping the turtles in place. We see the turtles are kind of stuck. Raph has reverted to that old vigilante justice in Mutant Town, and the rest of the turtles are bumming it at the O'Neill farmhouse, just sort of existing and mourning.
Man, we've got the twist. Okay.
The twist, 10, and not the number. And in very classic Kisho Tenketsu fashion, it's very unexpected. Mikey loses his emotional support cat and breaks down, forcing all the turtles to come back together. Then they find the cat and burst into laughter. It broke some of the tension, and for the first time in half a year, they're able to talk about what happened.
And that was, in fact, unexpected. Then show, which is the end,
where they put the headbands back on 99 issues after the deceased father gave them those headbands, and they decide to start the Hamato clan in his honor.
It was a real beautiful full circle coming together situation. And since it's Sophie, we get a fifth act that I'll call Soph. Yeah, I'll call it Soph. Where the turtles go to a concert and Raph and Alapex finally kiss. They get to kiss.
Really? Kisho Tenketsu Soph?
Nah, Kisho Tenketsu Soph.
Anyway, fun fact about the closer coming full circle, that was a happy accident.
True, true story, y'all.
My tie-in question is, I don't know if you recognize, but it's like exact when the turtles put their headbands back on and sort of reunite at the end of their first arc, it is almost exactly 100 issues after Splinter gifted the turtles their colored headbands and Raph his size.
Is it really? Because that was number, that was number five, right?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, damn. I wish I'd realized that. I would have, like, pushed that back an issue. I honestly did not realize that. That's really cool.
That's a happy accident. That's
crazy.
Yeah, that's definitely a happy accident. Damn, I should have put that in 105. I'm flipping through this trade. I can't even find it. Where is it? Oh, here it is.
Yeah, and it happens at the tail end, so it probably really could have slid.
Yeah. Oh, well. It's always, you know, it's always how it goes. You know, always looking back on it and wish I could do something different.
So, now that Sophie has arrived, and you know her style, and how she's applying it, we can focus on what she's doing with the rest of her turtles run.
Yeah. We got to unpack all of that with Sophie and how she sees the turtles in this character-driven arc and some of her plans for the future.
You have the turtles enclosed quite often. And I always thought it made sense that Jenny wore clothes because she was human most of her life. But now I'm sort of getting used to seeing, you know, Don and Leo and the gang enclosed. What made you decide to put them in clothes, and how do you decide what their fashion sense is going to be if they're so used to being naked all the time?
Yeah, it was mostly like, it was mostly based on what, it was based on like what the other artists had done before me, like particularly Matea Santoluco, and most of his character designs, you know, he gives all the mutants clothes. Like, even Pigeon Pete has like boxer shorts or whatever, and like Herman the Hermit Crab, like he's got like four legs or whatever, but he has pants, and you know, which is great. You know, I love Mateus, but like, oh, like it didn't occur to me at first, but like over time, and especially when I started like coming up with all like this mutant town stuff for the turtles, it was kind of just like, wow, you know, like everybody, like every other mutant in this series has pants, basically, except like Alopex. And like even sometimes she'll have, actually, no, I don't think she had pants at all back then. But yeah, so it was the turtles and Alopex were naked. And I felt like the more mutants that would show up that had clothes of some kind, like the weirder it got. And then with Mutant Town, it's like, okay, so it's like this entire neighborhood of mutants with pants. and the turtles are like the only ones that like don't have pants.
Right.
And it just like, I felt like it just, it started, you know, like they have different origins, you know, like they used to be animals, you know, everybody else in Mutant Town and, and Jenny, they were humans first. So like, you know, it's different. It's not quite the same, but like even some of the animal mutants would have pants, you know, like Hob and Herman and Mondo Gecko had pants, you know, stuff like that. And it just kind of reached a tipping point for me where it was like, you know, if the turtles are going to be living in this community, you know, they shouldn't be walking around naked, because like they technically are naked, they're shells, they're not clothes, you know, it's not an outfit. And people aren't going to want to send their kids to the turtles ninja dojo to karate lessons when the senseis don't have any pants. And it's just like, that was what my thinking became. And very early on, because I was doing like we have to do the covers like pretty far in advance for like solicits and stuff like that for previews. So, and my original cover of Mona Lisa, she didn't have any pants, because I was like still kind of clinging to this idea that like mutants didn't have to wear pants because like they're animals and they're kind of like cartoon characters. And, you know, there shouldn't be anything like inherently like sexual about it. You know, it doesn't mean anything. But then the powers that be are like, no, you got to put pants on her. So I did. And then I was just like, okay, if she's got to wear pants, you know, she's like a salamander. She has nothing to hide or whatever. But if she has to wear pants, everybody's getting pants. So that was my decree. And, you know, there are still some mutants that don't have pants, like Diamond the Porcupine. She doesn't have pants, but, you know, she's got a lot of fur or whatever, so it's fine. But that was my executive order to give the turtles clothes. And for their fashion, because like, yeah, it's kind of weird because like, how do you know what your fashion sense, like, how do you even know what clothes to wear if you've like never really worn clothes before? You know? So I kind of tried to imagine, like, you know, I didn't get to do it, but like the turtles kind of having this like thrift store montage where they all go out, mm-hmm. and, you know, they just pick up like all these hand-me-down secondhand clothes, and they're just kind of like at the mercy of like what they can find in Mutant Town, basically. Or maybe they raided April's parents' house or something for clothes. But I tried to keep it like, you know, like I think I gave Raph, you know, I gave him like a bandana and like a trench coat, you know, because he's like kind of an edgelord. And I gave Leo like aviator sunglasses, and like Michelangelo's got like a leather jacket or something. So I tried to give them something that kind of like reflects them a little bit. And Mateus actually did. He would occasionally give Raph jeans, like jeans and like a big like gold belt buckle and like a jacket and stuff. So even he was kind of setting up the clothes thing like early on. So I kind of tried to, for Raph anyway, I kind of tried to like springboard off of what he had done with, like, you know, just kind of jeans and just kind of like this like tough guy kind of, not like trucker chic, but like just this kind of like he wouldn't be out of place like walking into like a biker bar kind of thing. And yeah, it's definitely fun, like trying to come up with what they would wear and, you know, have it reflect their personality to some degree. Yeah, it's definitely pretty fun. And, you know, I know some people hate it. Some people hate the clothes. Some people love it. But I think it makes sense.
I'm very with the clothes because because the whole mutant town thing to me is like, the turtles don't have to hide.
Yeah.
For the first time. And so they're part of society for the first time, which I don't think is a place that any incarnation of the turtles has really been before, where do they get to live like people?
Yeah.
And also, maybe like you coming in out of college, if they spent their whole life hiding, it's like, what do we do now that we've got lives to live?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, they're part of society, and it's like, you know, they kind of, you know, they start to actually, no, maybe they don't have any shame. But it's like, you know, you know, they have to start to realize that it's like, wow, we can't just wear like belts all the time and nothing else when we're like going to the store, you know?
Right. Yeah. So like in my head canon, I always felt that them getting clothes or them donning clothes would be more of a, like they do it in a sense, I guess, out of necessity to, you know, like integrate into the society.
Yeah.
Since it's their first society, but also I felt like Mikey would be the first to be like an early adopter of like, oh, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. And then, you know, I guess him just doing it continually seeps into the rest of the brothers and they just slowly be like, well, I guess Mikey's doing, we'll just kind of like go along.
Yeah. Or maybe like, you know, Mikey and, you know, Leo, you know, they go out and they do something and Mikey's got clothes, but like Leo's still doing the knee pads and belt look.
And, traditionalist.
Right. And like, you know, they run into some other mutants and the other mutants are just like, you know, like, are you gonna, you know, dude, get some pants? And Leo's just like, what are you talking about? What do you mean? And there's this kind of like, you know, Mikey's just like, dude, you gotta get some pants. And it just kind of goes from there.
Said before, you think the turtles' weapons sort of mimic their personalities, and as how you think each of the turtles' weapons sort of are representative of who they are.
Well, I guess, you know, since we were talking about Karai's sword, like the weapons thing is like, you know, Leo, the katana, it's this very kind of noble weapon. And I feel like that is Leo, right? He's, you know, he's like the straight and narrow kind of guy. Donatello, his is like, you know, I mean, they're all technically lethal weapons, but, you know, the bow is just like, it's like the simplest of all the weapons. Not that Donatello is simple, but he's just like, he's like kind of, he's like maybe the most like insightful, I guess. And kind of like, there was a lot of stuff, particularly in Mirage, where he would just like be kind of closer to nature, you know, and he would talk about like patterns in nature and, you know, like the science of nature and stuff like that. And like the bow is wood, you know, so it's this kind of like almost like pacifist weapon in a way. And I think that fits him. And then Michelangelo, you know, his weapon is like, you know, it's got like a cord or a chain and it's like, it moves, you know, and it's all over the place. It's like kind of crazy, kind of unpredictable in a way. And that fits him pretty well. And then Raph, he is like, I've always like, so way back, going back to the Palladium Turtles RPG game, like they had the turtle stats in the back and they were all different heights. Like Donatello was like 5 feet, like 5 feet tall. And they had Raph as like four foot six and he was the shortest. And like that has like really stuck with me. And that's like, he's got kind of like the short man complex. And that's part of why he's like, so, you know, like in your face all the time, because he's got to make up for it. And that, and the Psy, you know, it's the smallest weapon. Like Raph, I mean, he's not you know, depending on what version you look at, he's not always the smallest turtle. But, you know, he's small, he's pointy, he's got a lot of points. And, you know, just like the Psy, and the Psy is also like a blocking weapon, you know, like, you know, you can kind of stab with it. You can hit somebody with like the butt of the handle, and you can block stuff with all of its like prongs and points and stuff. And I feel like fighting someone wielding a Psy is probably the most frustrating, because it's, you know, he can like flip it around to different angles and just like intercept stuff and then stab you with the same weapon. And it's just like, it feels really rough. And then Jenny's weapon, I thought a lot about her Tekkokage claws, and hers is the only weapon that is like, it's like independent of her hands. Like, she doesn't have to hold it really. It just kind of hooks on, like, under her palm. And I felt like that is kind of like her like past as an assassin. It's kind of just like attached to her, you know, and she doesn't like hold it willingly. It's just like on her hands at all times.
I feel like the claws, when you say they're just sort of attached to her, I feel like they're there even when she's not wearing them, because we've seen a couple moments like when the porcupine just wanted to join the band, and in 113 where she tries to get close to people, and, you know, if she was trying to reach out and touch them with her hand, she couldn't because the claws are in the way.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, and she can't just drop the claws like you could drop like a sword. You know, she has to like pause and kind of take them off her hands.
I guess I'll say, where do you think Jenny fits in as a member of the Turtles family, and what other things do you want to explore as you got her in the slowdown time?
Yeah, I thought a lot about how she's going to fit, you know, because like, you know, like obviously the characters are more than just, you know, Michelangelo's the funny one. You know, they're more than that. But I still felt like Jenny kind of like she needed some kind of like sum up, you know, like that. And so I've been really trying to push like her like music angle, you know, because there's no musical turtle. And I thought that was pretty good. Bram Revel had already kind of set that up a little bit in his What is Ninja shorts. And I felt like Jenny, since she didn't grow up with the other turtles, I felt like she wouldn't really like put up with their shit as much. And I felt like I tried to kind of think about how each turtle deals with Raph as kind of the litmus test. And, you know, Leo, he kind of like, you know, they butt heads, and Michelangelo kind of tries to like diffuse Raph, like when he's, you know, rah, crazy. And Donatello would just kind of like either, he would just kind of leave and like let Raph like blow off some steam. So I felt like Jenny, she would kind of like, she would like actively goad Raph and kind of like call him on it and be like, why are you being such a whiny baby? Which is like not something like Leo would do, for example. She's kind of like the sassy, bad big sister turtle. And like, that's good. That's kind of how I've been trying to like position her, like in the dynamic, in the group dynamic.
Oh, so on the topic of badass female characters, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Oroku Karai, because I would be thrilled for more time to be spent on Karai too. More Karai story is always a great thing in my book, particularly knowing how, you know, when we end with Splinter's death and where she is, you know, with the foot, I want to see that, like, you know, is there a redemption arc? Is there just like continually going down this path of, ooh, you know,